welcome to On the Brink Radio. This is Jeff Phillips-Weverson coming at you from beautiful Buffalo Creek in the Northern Territory, a sort of far eastern coastal region from Darwin, about maybe 15 or 20 Ks from the CBD. It's a very, very amazing place. It's actually a good-sized river that comes out. And yesterday and today, yesterday I saw more birds here than I think I've ever seen in one place in my whole life. Probably, I mean, it's not an exaggeration to say that there was hundreds of thousands, maybe not millions, but of course I didn't count them, but I mean, you wouldn't believe how many. And then I looked over on the far side of the river, and there, as far as I could see, as far as my camera could zoom, even more, just as many on the other side. So like right now, the tide's in a bit more, and there's a few hundred, but not nearly like yesterday. But I'm watching a really cool pelican, just kind of, he's in the shallow ocean where the waves are coming in, but he's going sideways, just kind of making his way, coming up in front of me. They're so cool. But I've just been having amazing nature blessings here in Darwin the whole time, but this week has been especially powerful. Like, I think it was on Monday, I was at a place called East Point, and I was going to have my little swim right before sunset, and these two people sitting there at my spot. So I stayed up on the hill and started playing my flute and burning my sage as the sun was going down. And right as I was honoring the whales and dolphins with some sage, at that exact instant, a dolphin appeared. I saw his dorsal fin, and he came up out of the water and went down and back under and kind of passed right in front of me for the next few minutes. But that was just such an awesome, beautiful gift of synchronistic chi sei, or knowing, from Mother Nature. Then, 2 days ago, there was this amazing thunderstorm, and the thunder, I'm also not exaggerating to say that the thunder was continuous for over an hour. I mean, it never stopped. There would be your big peals and booms and stuff, but then the rumbling, before the rumbling faded away, the next one would come. So I recorded a lot of this because it was just so cool. And then finally, when I decided that I had to stop recording and go and do something else, as soon as I stopped recording, it thundered one more time, and then it stopped, as if it knew. And this is just so amazing. And then, after the hour-long thunder spectacle, there appeared a beautiful double rainbow, Aniwaniwa, that lasted for over an hour. And so I sat and watched her. And that was just so amazing. And then the birds yesterday, and the sound of the frogs, and everything is just so amazing. And the... And 3 days ago when I was here, after that thunder, and they call them sky mountains, these giant thunderheads that you see, they do look like mountains in the sky. But here at this same beach, there was this amazing, just black mass of clouds coming in from the east, and I kept waiting for the thunder and the lightning to erupt, but it didn't. It just started kind of a few drops of rain and stuff, and the mosquitoes were eating me alive. So anyway, I'm back here today. Here comes Mr. Pelican. He's coming out. Not quite in front of me yet, but he's coming. This show is in honor of something that I've talked about in passing many times on my show, but I've never really formally addressed it with a show of its own. It's about what we call telepathic communication. Communication between minds, whether human or non-human, that don't involve any known sensory channels of information transfer, whether it be sound or light or vibration or smell or touch. Nothing like that. It's using possibly energetic means, consciousness, whatever you want to call it. And to me, there's no question that it's real. And I think everybody has had little glimmers of experience like this now and then. It's usually accidental or unexpected, and usually involves passionate or intense emotions, and often with somebody that you're very close to, like your partner or a close friend. It's like you read each other's mind, you're having the same thought at the same time, you know what each other's thinking and stuff like that. But it's It's kind of like we just have kind of like fleeting moments of this here and there. I've got to pause and film Mr. Pelican. Well, he got out and stretched his legs a little bit, and for a minute it looked like he was walking right towards me. But then he turned and went sideways, and now he's back in the water. Now he just stuck his head down under the water as if he was trying to find a fish, which must be what he's doing. But he's just tooling up the coast, going very, very slow. Anyway, this show is going to be broadcast live on UCY TV on right spot on the blue moon of October 31st or November 1st, depending on where you are, the second full moon in October. And so this is really, really special. And it reminds me of last year. I learned what a black moon is, when you've got two new moons in the same month. And that was in, I think it was August or September of last year, when I was on Great Barrier Island and flew to Auckland to have a physiotherapy appointment. Oh my God, all these seagulls just flew over. It's so beautiful. And I met the All Blacks, the rugby players, on the black moon. Anyway, this show is about telepathic communication, non-local connections here in the Anka window, which is the one of two periods of time each year during which the Earth passes through the debris cloud of the supercomet Anka, who disintegrated or is in the process of disintegrating over the past tens of millions of years. But I think that there's many ways of knowing in the kingdoms of life that are our nature, but that have been long forgotten in our species, especially since the dawn of civilization and self-domestication, self-mutation. We still have these abilities, and they still appear from time to time. They aren't destroyed. They're just atrophied from lack of use. It's like your muscles might get really weak and saggy if you never exercise. Same with your brain and your mind powers if you never use it. That's one of the really cool things I think about how, I won't say I've got an overactive mind, but it's quite active, and it likes to, it has its own little exercise routines. Like making up new words is one of the things that my brain mind likes to do. Sort of does it on its own, and it doesn't really bother me with them, except now and then it'll tell me to write some down, but it's just kind of like a little, but it's like an exercise. I can turn it off if I don't want to do it, or, you know, don't pay attention to it, but it's like, you know, so if you can train yourself to do all kinds of little sort of cognitive yoga, if you want to think of it that way. But it's really cool just to have fun with that, having a brain mind. I think part of the whole thing with telepathy, now I'm not going to argue whether you think it's real or not. People go like, oh, give us some proof. And of course, but it's totally subjective. I mean, even, we can't even, and I don't really like the word prove, but you know, like even when somebody says something to somebody else, how do we know that what they heard is the same thing that what the person said? And I don't even mean phonetically or acoustically, but in terms of the semantics or the meaning conveyed. And then you've got the Chinese whispers thing, where people pass the idea around the room, and by the time it gets back around, it's severely mutated. So it's amazing that we communicate as well as we do, but we're sort of fixated on the whole linguistic thing. We talk about how other animals talk to each other, how they speak, how we're going to decode their language, you know, all this stuff. And I think that that's completely wrong, a complete anthropomorphic projection onto fellow beings that do have extremely sophisticated modes of communicating, some of which we might have that are atrophied, others that we don't have or have never had, or maybe we have in a more rudimentary way, like we don't have the hearing of dolphins or even dogs, or we don't have the vision of raptors, or the sense of smell of like an octopus or a cat or a dog, you know. So it's very interesting that I think a big part of this is remembering who and what we really are. It's not about developing something we never had, you know. And then there's another aspect when you think of telepathy and what they used to call ESP, extrasensory perception, and it was along with this, it was a big fad there for a while back in the 1970s with the New Age stuff. All it was called remote viewing, and apparently the military and the CIA and all these MK Ultra people did a lot of work with people to try to see if they could remote view as a sort of a weapon, like a spy, a secret agent spy weapon, where somebody could remote view into somebody's room and see who they're with, or remote view and eavesdrop in and hear what they're talking about, or remote view and look at somebody's diary, or, you know, it's just all kind of like subversive. And so whenever you approach paranormal abilities with weaponization in mind, it's automatically going to put a spin on it that's going to limit what you're able to do. And sure, you might accomplish a bit, but, you know, like, again, proving that anything like that is what happened. Like, the whole thing with telepathy is totally subjective. Like, and, you know, and it also ties in with, if you want to call it altered states of consciousness. A lot of people that have done... Oh, these seagulls keep flying over. It's so beautiful.
Oh, my God.
People that have done psychedelics have probably had moments or instances of feeling like that they were in telepathic communication. And again, with everything that's happening in your mind, especially if it's not being shared with and or verified by somebody else, then it's what we call subjective, and it's it can be whatever you want in your mind. But when it comes to convincing somebody else, I mean, what we're talking about is this big gray area that kind of defines the difference between somebody that might be between two people that might be equally sort of mad, equally schizophrenic, or, you know, that those words have negative connotation, but people with their whole makeup is skewed or different from the statistical norm, and their perceptions of reality might be different and no less equally good or real or valid or true, but it's their ability to share or communicate it that kind of puts, that makes them either to like a famous artist or somebody that's locked up in the loony bin. If you see what I'm saying. So all of our internal experience is quite subjective. But what if we were able to live in a world where... Well, see, it's so hard for us to imagine what it might be like. For example, if dolphins do have sort of like an open-ended shared consciousness, what would that be like? Because, you know, we sort of, we're locked into our whole isolated ego, the personality, persona that's formed since we're a kid. And I think that's largely a function of the behavioral repertoire of the society that we live in, and also a function of the type of languages that we use. But we have a pretty well-defined ego and sense of isolated self that sets us apart. So if, when you've got that, that's kind of at odds with having a true sort of blended group consciousness. And so I felt that the dolphins and the whales might have, they each have, of course, their own unique identity, but it may not be that the boundary between them and their fellow beings, whether it's their other members of their family or their pod or their same species or all of life, the boundaries are not so blurred. And again, Terry Lilly and Glenn Edney, my underwater photographer, marine biologist friends, have both commented on the kind of the sense of unity between life that you feel down under the water. Because since water is the primary thing that life is made from and dependent on, it only makes sense that if you've got life made of water that's in water, it's going to be more, exhibit more sort of water-like qualities, which only makes sense. So it could be that the whole thing of telepathic communication could be related to the consciousness of water. Like, it's kind of like, it could be the all-surrounding... They used to have this concept called the ether that was this invisible substance that filled the space between all the planets and the stars, and that was the medium that carried all the electromagnetic waves and stuff like that. And who's to say what's really there? I mean, pretty much, whatever we want to be there is what we're going to see. especially if somebody's paying you to write a research article about it, if they've paid you to discover this, by Jove, you're probably going to find it, you know. And it's like the notion of objectivity is kind of thrown into question here. So as long as the people that are communicating or living together believe or have the same, if they believe the same things or hold the same things to be important, or they're dealing with the same exigencies in their immediate reality, then communication is possible. But if people just don't have anything in common at all, what do they have to communicate about? So I think that it may be whale and dolphin communication may be more kind of pragmatic than ours. I mean, I don't know if you're going to have dolphins just kind of floating around shooting the shit, like, you know, two farmers with a beer smoking a cigarette or something like that. Do they do that? Or maybe do they sort of go into a sort of a yogic meditational silence mode of being in the water, but this is if they can find a place in the ocean that's not being bombarded with anthropogenic noise. So all of these things relate. The military and the intelligence community might have achieved covered a certain amount of ground with this kind of thing, but I don't think they've got anything like scanners that can look at somebody and make their head blow up, anything like that, although they probably would, they'd probably try to have it if they could. But there's a big difference if your approach to higher orders of information transfer like this, if you're trying to decode something or glean information from it or target it or listen in or eavesdrop or crack its code or something like that, it kind of puts you at odds with it. Whereas if you kind of blend and you don't, not really attached to any outcome, and you're able to just kind of listen with your mind and your heart, listen to what might be there, what might be being shared that may be being there for you to experience or specifically being shared with you, all of these things. So I think if your heart and mind are on the right kind of wavelengths and frequencies and vibrations, that has a big difference in your experience of this. But when we hear words, they usually have a meaning in someone's mind, whether it's, if it's words someone spoke to you, and you sort of in general know where it came from. You know if it came from the person sitting across from you, the person standing next to you on the bus, the person on the train, the person on the telephone, or if it's somebody's voice coming from the television or radio who's not speaking explicitly to you personally. You know where it's coming from, but when a thoughts appear in your mind that you may be wondering now, is that my thought or is that somebody else's thought? Where did that come from? Why did I think that? You know, and was that transmitted to me by somebody else? So it's all quite indeterminate. But I don't think we really even understand sensory forms of communication, much less non-sensory. Because there's just a lot we don't know about. For example, Rupert Sheldrake's idea of morphogenetic fields and resonance and stuff like that as being forms of information transfer, and it relates to music and that kind of thing. But anyway, my own experiences with telepathy. Well, for example, I think that this is a big generalization because I haven't met all that many full-blooded indigenous Australians, but quite a few, maybe a couple of two or three dozen in my life. And the very first full-blooded Aboriginal person I met her name is Kathleen Wallace. She's the leader of the Kuringi Arts Group at St. Teresa, south of Alice Springs. Met her in 2003, and I sensed that she kind of knew what I was thinking. And we stood in each other's presence, acknowledging each other, but we didn't really say anything. We didn't really need to, but we sort of knew. It's like we could feel or know each other. So this was like, and it was very powerful, very powerful. I always remember that. And so I think that this is the one of the attributes of the people of Australia as a whole, before they become sort of had all their innate abilities civilized out of them, were blocked and distorted. They're truly telepathic beings, and I think the whales and dolphins are just like that too. They just kind of like, it's not like something has to be transmitted or shared. They just kind of like, there's this kind of instantaneous field of knowing of stuff. And it may be, now I talked before about the non-local connection. That goes back to this thing called the Einstein-Podolsky-Rosenfeld paradox. It has to do with some kind of experiment where they had two subatomic particles that were spinning together, and then they were in close proximity, and then when they took them very far apart, like even at a relativistically significant distance, when they, whatever they did to one particle, the other particle did the same thing, even though they were really, really up. I mean, that's kind of like a gross generalization of the whole experiment, but the idea is that you can have non-local connections that aren't contingent on a velocity of exchange, like the speed of light we tend to think of as an absolute limit. It's what you call simultaneity. And again, we're talking about simultaneity is a matter of perception. Just like Jung's concept of synchronicity, it's artifacts of perception. And so with synchronicity, which he called an acausal connecting principle, which implies, it says right out that that it's not, if you perceive a synchronicity of two or more events happening to you at the same time, the meaning is in you at the perception of them happening at the same time, but it doesn't mean that they're causally related in the world. But you might attribute the causality of something to this perception. So it's really interesting how all this works. But I think that a lot of people that have worked with, if you start reading up on people that have worked with dolphins, like the legendary New Zealand researcher Frank Robson, who apparently has whole chapters in his book about thought transfer with whales and dolphins. I've got to get these books and read up on that. I think Glenn Edney, I don't think you ever met him, but he was familiar with his work, but he has a book called Pictures in the Dolphin Mind. But people that work with dolphins and whales, orcas, flipper, they talk about how they can sort of read your mind. They'll know what you're thinking and do it. And this is just sort of really kind of a simple behavioral thing, but I think that they know. They're kind of just going along with the game. But people that work with horses and other animals like dogs, they report the same kind of thing. And so the biggest, most powerful, what I consider to be a telepathic information transfer in my life was when the dolphin sent that image of the Commodore asteroid passing through the atmosphere just about 5 years ago, 4 days ago, on the 25th of October, 2015 is when that happened. And I know. I mean, I've had plenty of experience with psychedelics, and I'm a very visual person, and I see images in my mind's eye, and an idea from a painting will just pop up, and stuff like that. But this image from the dolphins was qualitatively different from all of those. And it happened after I had just come from being with them. And because of where it was and when it was and how it happened and what it was, it's just been a very, very, very powerful thing. And it relates to where we are right now in the Anka window, this period of time when the Earth is most likely to encounter fragments of the supercomet. So I think that we all have the potential for telepathic communication and all kinds of other abilities too. But you go like, well, what do we actually need? You know, and it's interesting that Aldous Huxley, when I read his book, The Doors of Perception, he talked about a French psychologist named Henri Bergson that had the idea that our brain acts kind of like not only an antenna, but also like a filtering mechanism that it filters out a lot of the complete spectrum of energy information that we're perceiving all the time, and only lets through information that's biologically useful to us as living beings. And so when these filters become skewed, like maybe when you take a bunch of acid or something like that, it kind of lets in a lot more stuff. And it could be that these filters exist for a reason. Because if we were bombarded with everything that's there all the time, it would be impossible to function. You know, all your senses, all your channels would just be flooded. They would be like whited out with noise. And so I think there's also a good reason why we, in the world of today, who'd want to be telepathic? I mean, you need to have a degree of control over it. Like with me, it's just kind of spontaneous. It's not like I go like, oh, I'm going to turn on my telepathic communication and see if I can see what those people are thinking. But I'm sort of dialing into the whales and dolphins of Mother Earth all the time. And I think that you kind of evolve these abilities in yourself so that your whole system is constantly refining and tuning in and filtering out this and that so that you're able to compensate for noise that might be blocking out the subtle water-based life transmissions that a lot of people are missing, but you might be able to still pick up on it because your ability to filter out the noise and the chaos. You've learned how to do that over the decades of dealing with being here now. But I think that, imagine, you know, like what if you might be in a room where you've got to listen to a bunch of people talking really loud, talking on the phone, or maybe people arguing or shouting at each other, or your neighbors in their house at night, 3 meters away from you, having a chucking the fruity at each other, and stuff like that. You know how bad that can be? Well, imagine if you had to know what other people were thinking all the time and couldn't shut it off. It would be maddening. It would just, you'd just go stark raving mad, and it would be like people hearing voices, you know, and maybe just because the radio's on or the TV. And I think the noises in my neighborhood from all the people with the radio and the tractors and the motorcycles and the power tools and the dog barking, I'm classifying it as acoustic poltergeists that I might be able to smudge away if I burn enough sage. But so anyway, I think that there's a good reason. I mean, you don't want to be telepathic in a world where you're going to have to listen to millions of insane people thinking insane thoughts. And I also think, I've used the concept of a firewall, which is, you know, in construction, it's a wall they build that contains a fire. But in computers, a firewall is some kind of harder software boundary that prevents access to certain regions of the computer or certain information from being decoded or transmitted. So I think that the whales and dolphins actually have, and I'm not sure if they put it there or if Mother Nature put it there or it's just kind of spontaneously there, but they have a firewall preventing us from ever, quote unquote, decoding how they communicate. And I used to think that communicating with them in this kind of way was one of the most important things that humans could aspire to, but in recent years I realized that no, that would be one of the worst things, because what if the Navy learned how to communicate with the dolphins in such a way that they could broker deals with them, convince them to go and do this, and they've already got them to do stuff like that by training them, but it wasn't through learning their language and then convincing them logically. I don't think it worked like that. You know, so I don't think we'll never have that with the whales and dolphins, because how they communicate is nothing like that. It's all sort of language, Western language like English. It's very goal-oriented. It's purposefully designed. The reason that we talk and communicate, it's usually got some kind of motivation or initiative behind it that's often quite selfish. And you know, I think that the reason whales and dolphins communicate, it's a lot more like the reasons why we might play music for each other. It's not about getting something. It's not about complaining. It's not about rationalizing why you didn't do anything today. It's not about trying to sell something or get something from somebody else. It's about just sharing beauty, music. If we use language more like music, we'd proceed a light year. So, I had another really interesting experience telepathically with trees. And this was, when I tell you this, it'll probably make sense. But this was in 1998. And I'd visited this place in Scotland called Findhorn, which is known for where people communicated with the spirit of plants and stuff like that. And I really did feel a kind of a special energy there after I was there a few days. Well, anyway, I was leaving and I was in Ireland and in a town called Tralee. And I had to go find a Western Union office and pick up some money, and I was kind of in a bad mood. And so the closest route to get to the Western Union office from where I was took me through this giant forest of these giant old trees. And it was this huge canopy, and it was dark in there even though it was a sunny day. Very magic place. And I was just kind of walking down through there and kind of not really thinking, and all of a sudden this was so powerful, it made me stop in my tracks and just go, whoa, oh my God, I felt it. So it was like some kind of grandfatherly or grandmotherly energy came down and came around me and soothed me as if it was giving me an energy hug, and it made me feel all right. It calmed me down. It was all, I'm not saying I heard voices speaking to me, but it was almost as if it was like going, Jeffrey, we're the spirit of these trees, and we want you to know that we love you, and it's okay, just calm down and relax, and you're with us now. You're in our home, in our energy field, in our special nematon. And so I stood there for a while, and that blew me away. And then I started telling people about that, and go like, oh, yeah, those trees are known for that kind of thing. So it's like, you know, if you want to put this under the category of telepathic communication, I certainly would. But the clearest example and research that's been done on this is by an anthropologist named Jeremy Narby, who went down to the Peruvian Amazon the 1990s, I guess, and he was helping with land rights, but he became interested in ayahuasca. But he wasn't doing like the Carlos Castaneda Don Juan thing, but it was, in some ways, it was kind of like that. He didn't really become apprenticed to any certain person, but he did sort of get taken under the wing of some of the ayahuasqueros and the medicine men, and started to learn about that whole tradition. And that's when he started learning from his own experience that non-sensory information transfer is very real, regardless of whether you're on a psychedelic drug or not. And his conclusion was, which is reflected in the title of his book, The Cosmic Serpent, DNA and the Origins of Knowledge. And his hypothesis is that not only shamans in altered states, but all of us all the time are actually in communication with and being communicated to and from by the consciousness of DNA itself, the master molecule of life. So this is just, it's like DNA is like an extraterrestrial intelligence, as is water. That was actually going to be the title of the show, Water as an Extraterrestrial Intelligence, but everything I'm talking about relates. It relates to the Cetacean, Karingi, Lawler, Lilly, Narby, Ricketts, Velikovsky, Klub, Napier, Alvarez, Asher, Ferrata, Harrington, Marsden hypothesis. That's kind of the story of my life. And it's very interesting that I'm sitting here on the beach on the outskirts of Darwin, which I reckon to be in my own intuitive reckoning, the throat chakra in the body of the rainbow serpent. Uluru being the red or root chakra, and Tasmania being the crown or violet chakra. So I think that we're in constant communication with the consciousness of DNA, the consciousness of water, and this is all sort of a continuum of holographic information, living information about life herself. And it's like, when you tune in, it's like the music of the spheres, and it's just life and creativity just giving off the energy and vibrations that it is. And you can just perceive that as beautiful, the most amazing multi-dimensional complex artwork on every level. That's nature, that's reality. And it's one of our jobs is to just perceive that and glorify and maybe emulate or mimic that creativity a little bit with our own art and music, our sacred creativity. But beyond that, there's more pragmatic things like the occasional planetary catastrophe that might strike that the whales and dolphins have witnessed, and they might be able to share with us story about this. And I think that's exactly is what's been going on with me for the past 5 years. The whales and dolphins telling us about an impending planetary catastrophe involving an impact from a comet or asteroid, similar to ones that have happened countless times before in the history of life. And so, do we want to attach meaning to this teleologically? Would this be to punish us for not living on the true path of the Great Spirit, for breaking the Dreamtime law and lore, and for our European civilization to have destroyed so much life on Mother Earth, and continuing to do so now more than ever? Would that be our just reward? Or would it just be a random cosmic event due to gravitational perturbations and the influence of Jupiter on comets and all this different kind of stuff? So I think the whales and dolphins understand a lot of that and are trying to communicate it with us. And so that's one of the things I'm involved in right at this very moment here with all my artwork, is both receiving and transmitting to and from the whales and dolphins and the consciousness of DNA and the consciousness of water and all the planets in the heliocosm, is maps of these processes that are going on, as well as creating maps and charts of to describe not only to other people but to the whales and dolphins via eidetic telepathic transmission, to show them that the sea monster that they might think is attacking them is actually us. It's our artificially intelligent technologies with that can electrocute them and send rockets and drones and autonomous unmanned vehicles under the water and explosives and microwaves and everything. This is us. This is man the wise being exercising his wisdom as the tyrant of Mother Earth. Anyway, I guess that's enough for now. Maybe when you're watching this, listening to this broadcast, telepathically or on the radio, that beautiful blue full moon's going to be up and out. So go out and, if it's night, go out and be with the full moon. And we're in the Anka window. And on the 21st of December, we've got a beautiful conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn, and I might be at Uluru in the central desert. Anyway, this is Jeff Phillips-Wefferson signing off here from Buffalo Creek, Northern Territory. Live simply so that others may simply live. May Goddess bless the Homo sapiens.
I'm gonna go to the hospital.